anybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
I'm gonna serve up. That's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that. He hit the ball. That gets a free sting.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, Astros still down 1-0. Astros have been the dominant topic of discussion so far today, and we'll continue to work on the Astros, and most people are complaining about the lineup or what Dusty. It's like Dusty has become the new Jake Odorizzi. Team's 31 games over 500, the best team in the American League, but man, you gotta have something to bitch about. People just aren't happy if they ain't bitching. So Jake Odorizzi.
That's deserving some of that, though.
Jake Odorizzi was the lightning rod because, well, he wasn't the analytical darling. He didn't have a high-velocity fastball. He didn't have some kind of crazy spin rate. He didn't get a. He wasn't a big-time swing-and-miss guy. He just got outs. Oh, he's not any good. He stinks. The whole he stinks thing, I mean, look, I already explained that time and time again, used these things called numbers and statistics to show why people who would say how he stinks into DFA and basically, you know, couldn't find their ass with both hands when it comes to baseball. That's a different story. But Dusty has now become the new Odorizzi. Well, he doesn't fully embrace analytics, therefore, well, he's an idiot. He doesn't know anything. That's why they're 31 games over 500, because their manager is an idiot. I mean, that makes sense.
Clearly.
Candy, you're on Late Hits. What's going on, Candy?
Hey, Patrick. This is Candy from Katy. First off, great play by Yuli just a few minutes ago. But what I really want to know is, why do the Astros struggle against the Oakland A's? Dallas Cowboys for life.
Well, Candy, you're a fellow Katy resident. So
I feel like we almost have to ban her from the show for dropping that Cowboys for life there at the very end. Kind of a drive-by she hit us with.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm a Giants fan, so, you know, my team sucks. I can't really say anything. But, you know, maybe she's connected. You know, I mean, maybe you should get together with our friend Cece, because she's the president of the Houston area Dallas Cowboys fan club. Look, it's okay that she's a Cowboys fan, because, look, nobody's perfect.
There you go.
And sometimes you just have to embrace people with their flaws. That's what it is. Why do the Astros struggle against the A's? There's no thing I can tell you is 100% the reason, other than things that we suspect are part of the reason. Part of the reason is playing the Astros is the World Series for Oakland every time they play.
Yeah, I mean, I know when the A's swept them, I guess a couple weeks ago, the Astros were coming off beating the Yankees, winning that World Series at Seattle, and then they got to go play in front of five fans in Oakland. Letdown seems like a cliche, easy out to take, but I think it's just a letdown. They don't get up for the A's the way they do the Yankees, the Mariners, and the better teams in the league.
And that's exactly the other part of this, Brian. If you have been a fan of the Astros over the last few years, you know this team has, for the last several years, been a team that gets itself up for big games and big series, and has tended to let down against, you know, inferior competition. You saw it last year at Kansas City. It's they do this. Luis García just got called for a balk.
And, yeah, brings home another
and that's
run.
Play now, to run.
What, 2-0? 2-0 Oakland now.
Yeah. So Tony Kemp is Superman against the Astros. They can't get Tony Kemp out.
Yeah, he single-handedly won one of those games in Oakland a couple weeks ago.
So, you know, it doesn't, there's no rhyme or reason to, I mean, look, they should go out there and smash the crap out of Oakland. I mean, they're facing a guy who's got a 7-plus ERA, and they got two freaking hits. Why they do this, I don't know. There are games where the Astros, for whatever reason, they're not, they're swinging at the first pitch. Over and over again. They're not taking pitches. They're not working counts. If you're swinging at the first pitch and you're not getting hits, the other team's pitcher is A, getting into a rhythm, and B, he's not getting tired at all.
Yeah, he can go a lot deeper in the game. I mean, a certain look. I mean, obviously, whoever's in the lineup should be able to get hits off of this guy with the 7 ERA. But this is certainly a spot where you'd love to see the big bat that you acquired at the deadline, Mancini, in the outfield or DH or somewhere, instead of some of these other guys that can't seem to hit water from a boat.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. Like I said, I think Mancini should be playing every day. And I would expect at some point he probably
will. Especially
at
home. If he's a bad outfielder, at least at home he's got, you know, he's got the Crawford boxes, only 315. You could play everything off the wall.
I mean, look, the Astros are not trying to put out their best offensive lineup. They're not. If they were trying to put out their best offensive lineup, all right, then Diaz would play left. He's playing left tonight. Or Yordan would play left. Mancini would be at first. Vasquez, who's behind the plate tonight, he would be behind the plate. Although, I'll tell you what, Maldonado, despite the fact I don't think he's had a walk since June,
hit really well in July.
He's hitting for power.
Yeah.
He's hitting homers. He's not hitting for much average.
His OPS was great in July.
But he's blasting homers, and as long as he continues to hit like that, should be in a full share of the catcher position. But realistically, if you were talking about, let's go best possible hitters, who's a better hitter right now, Ledmus Diaz or Jeremy Peña?
I'd probably go Diaz. Diaz has been hot. Peña's been scuffling bad.
Jeremy Peña, who early in the season was a Rookie of the Year candidate.
Yeah, that's lost.
Not on the planet right now. Not only is he hitting 245, but his OPS, his on-base is under 300.
Yeah, and you talk about that early start. Somewhere in mid-June, he was hitting about 300.
Yeah.
There was a series. It was that series where they only took, I think, one of three at Seattle. Coming into that series, he was hitting about 300. So not only is he hitting 240-something, but it's fallen off quite a bit. It's not like he's been there all season.
No, he has fallen off hard. Who do I want Jeremy Peña or do I want Ledmus Diaz? Is there a big fall-off defensively between Peña and Diaz?
No,
I don't think so. Not a big fall-off.
Especially not with the arm.
Yuli, and Yuli made a nice defensive play before, and then here makes a nice play to
save them.
Save an error on Jeremy Peña, because this is a terrible throw.
We just talked about his arm right on cue.
It's low, and it's down the line. Yuli's got to come off the bag, make a tag, extend his arm, which that's dangerous for a first baseman because you've got to extend your arm blindly behind your body.
Yeah, that's the way your shoulder gets ripped out.
You're going against the guy who's 200 pounds going the other direction. That is exactly how your shoulder gets pulled out. And Yuli, I know he hasn't had the kind of season that we wanted him to have at the plate. He's really been terrible, and he had a good month of July, and then he got cold again, and he had a couple of hits the other day.
He oddly hits for a lot of doubles, but does nothing else.
Yuli is still, if you watch him day to day, makes a huge impact defensively. Normally, first base is not where you're looking for your a great defender. Steve Balboni played first base. The guy couldn't bend over to tie his shoes.
Mark McGwire played first base.
There are so many guys who a first baseman, Bill Buckner was a first baseman when he was gotten old and could no longer be an outfielder, which if you guys were listening as we were talking about, different historic baseball calls, with Vin Scully passing away, all these historic Vin Scully calls. Vin Scully has one of the calls. Milo Hamilton has the other call on Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run. Well, Vince Scully's call says, Buckner looking up. The home run went over the head of Bill Buckner.
Oh, I see. I didn't even know that.
All right. It's 1974, and Bill Buckner is a left fielder. Fast forward to 1986, and here's Vince Scully with the call of the Mookie Wilson grounder. Behind the bag! It gets by Buckner! Now Bill Buckner playing first base. Buckner normally would not have been on the field.
He usually got replaced in like a late game defensive swap,
Dave
right?
Stapleton usually came in as a defensive replacement.
Because Buckner's knees were shot.
Buckner was an old man. He had bad knees. He could still hit, But he was an old man with bad knees, and they would put in Stapleton as a late-inning replacement. But John McNamara, who was the manager of the Red Sox in 86, they all thought the Red Sox were going home Game 6 World Series champions. And he left Buckner on the field as like a sign of respect. He wanted Buckner to be able to be on the field when they clinched. And then who was the pitcher? Former Met, who was on the mound. And, you know, now the Mets are making the comeback. And then you have the wild pitch that ties the game. And then you have the grounder by Mookie that scores the game winner. And then in Game 7, the Red Sox blow another one. So, but Buckner, in two of the most historic calls of all time, both by Vin Scully. That's our baseball lesson for tonight. We got plenty
Professor
more.
Professor Patrick Creighton here.
If it happened in baseball, I might remember. Anything else? When was my kid born? It's my anniversary. What's my birthday? Oh, what, Babe Ruth, Cole Trout? Yeah, 32 World Series. You know, I can't explain why. Who hit that ball that Willie Mays made that catch? Oh yeah, Vic Wertz. Stupid stuff, right?
Yeah, there's no way I could have pulled that out.
But if it's baseball, I remember. We'll get some more stuff on the Astros in a little bit. Coming up next, it's time for Money Plays. Our buddy Michael Ablin from Sports Map Elite has your Money Plays for UFC Saturday night. It's next.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
It's time for Money Plays. Brought to you in partnership with Sports Map Elite. Now get ready to take down the best money plays of the day.
All right, it's time for Money Plays. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5, joining us on the HRMB guest line right now. He is the MMA handicapper for Sports Map Elite. And you might want to listen, because last week on this very program, he handed out 6 plays. Michael was 6-0 on those 6 plays. Which isn't a surprise, because his picks have been really strong. But coming off a 6-0 week, he's Michael Ablin. What's going on, Mike? How you doing?
Hey, Patrick. Yeah, coming off a great week last weekend. Looking to keep riding it. How you feeling tonight?
Well, I feel like I want to win some money. I feel like I'm gonna, you know, take down some info, and I'm gonna get on my app, and I'm gonna play some plays that you tell me I need to play, because when I bet with you, I win this thing called money, and I like money. Money is good. When I bet and I win money, the missus does not complain that I'm, quote, throwing money away on gambling, and doesn't call me things like a dirty degenerate and a waster of money, and tell me that if you throw away any more money, I'm going to throw you away, and other horrible things like that. So I appreciate that you both, A, help me make money, and B, keep my marriage safe. So let's get to fight night this week, because we got a nice main event here. Bantamweight fight, Marlon Vera, Dominic Cruz as the headliner for UFC Fight Night in San Diego. Vera is I don't want to say substantial favorite, but he's a pretty good favorite. He's minus 240. It's a solid favorite to me. Dominic Cruz, we've seen Dominic Cruz put up really valiant efforts and losses. And he's 24-3 overall. He's plus 200. How do you see this fight shake out? Where is the value in this fight? Two guys who, you know, I don't know, is this the kind of fight you think, like, there's no way this goes the distance, or is this absolutely getting there?
Yeah, that was a great question, Patrick. I could see it going a couple ways, and because of that, I don't currently have any action on this fight, but I am very tempted to put a bet on Dominic Cruz at plus 200, and it's for a simple reason. So when I see this fight playing out, I think there's a really, really strong possibility that Dominic Cruz is winning the first two rounds. I think in all the scenarios I envision in my head, Dominic Cruz takes round one, and very likely he takes round two. Just for the pure fact that Marlon Vera is a little bit of a, I don't want to say slow starter, but he likes to take his reads before he really starts going. And when he's looking to exchange, he's often backing out of the pocket, entering back in, not throwing a lot at the beginning of fights, and tends to pick it up as the fight goes on. So this is going to be your kind of standard, you know, volume versus damage type of fight. I could see, well, I'm pretty sure that Dominic Cruz is going to outland Marlon Vera pretty significantly early in this fight. But the question for me is, what happens when this fight starts to get to round three, round four, round five? That's where we see Marlon Vera strive. And, I mean, even in his last fight against Rob Font, we saw him pretty much lose every single minute of the fight except for the parts where he was knocking down his opponents. And he knocked down Rob Font pretty much in every single round, wouldn't all George judge's scorecards. You could clearly see he landed the more damaging shots, but he was pretty significantly outlanded. So, you know, I'm not quite there yet on Cruz, but if I have a chance to watch the fights tomorrow night, what I'm thinking about doing is I'm thinking about going in with a bet on Cruz and then live betting Marlon Vera in round three, let's say, because I'm pretty sure Cruz is going to be up. And if he can just steal that third round and kind of hang on as the fight goes on, I can see him stealing a decision. But at the same time, I could see Vera winning a decision. I could also see Vera putting out Cruz late. So nothing for me, but I don't blame anybody for taking a shot on Cruz.
Now, Michael, is there a, like, depending on how the lines move over the next 24 hours, is there a point of line movement where you say, okay, the line is now moved where I'm definitely going to put money on Cruz, or, you know, if it continues to go up, or if, you know, the line for Vera drops below 240, it starts going down. Is there allowing me to say, okay, well, you know, now I'm looking that direction. Is there a spot of movement where you'd say, okay, now I would make a decision here or there based on that line?
I think if Cruz got to plus 250, I would just have to put a small unit on it just because I mean, he's going to win the first two rounds in my book. Meaning he just has to win one of three more. But I see super value on 250. Vera opened up as minus 150. So the oddsmakers think this fight plays out closer than the line is now. The public has kind of shifted towards Vera. I like that minus 150 line on Vera, but I don't think it's going to go back down that way.
Michael Ablin, Sports Map Elite MMA handicapper, has been scorching hot, coming off a 6-0 week. Co-main in this fight, Nate Landwehr and David Onama, featherweight fight. Onama is a significant favorite at minus 330. Landwehr is plus 260. Is this something where you see a value in a line there, or is this one of those fights that you're targeting, you know, not going to make the distance?
Yeah, that's another good question, Patrick. Originally, I was looking at this fight, and I saw Nate Landwehr at over plus, you know, 225, and I was like, wow, I don't see why Onama's a minus 400 favorite. But, you know, you look closer into this fight, and this fight is probably just going to be pure violence. These guys are going to meet in the center of the octagon. Both love forward pressure, and so it's just going to be two trains colliding, and whichever one's the strongest on that night is probably going to prevail. The other guy's probably going to go down. I kind of think Onama knocks out Landwehr, but honestly, I'm approaching this as a 50-50 fight, and I just see somebody getting knocked out, which really surprised me because when I looked at the under 1.5 rounds, it's sitting at plus money, and I snagged it for plus 125. In my mind, how I see this fight playing out, if it gets over a round and a half, you're just going to be kind of scratching your head about, wow, how is this fight going the distance? There'll be multiple knockdowns, and it'll kind of be just one of those head scratchers. There's going to be plenty of opportunity for this fight to end in the first 5 minutes. So at plus money, I get another half a round. So I'm liking that angle.
All right, women's strawweight fight on this card. Yasmin Yuregi and Jasmine Lucindo. I don't really know a whole lot about either one of these ladies, to be honest, Michael. But Yuregi is minus 200. Lucindo is plus 170. Sometimes when, you know, we get fighters who are coming in and don't have a whole lot of fights in the UFC under their belts, they really come out trying to take somebody's head off. What's your read on this fight? Like I said, I don't really know much about either one of these ladies.
Yeah, I didn't know either one of these ladies going into the event, so I was eager to learn a little bit more. And so I watched a couple of their previous fights, and kind of what we have here is a striker in Yasmin with a Y, and then Lucindo is more of a grappler, I would say, at least from their videos and past fights. And so when I saw Yasmin at, you know, a minus over 200 favorite debuting UFC fighter, those are all red flags to me, especially if you don't know them. So I started looking into them more, and I mean, she has some great hands. She's a boxer. She's going to come forward. She's very aggressive with her forward pressure, and she's knocking women out. Don't get me wrong. She is knocking them out. And then you look on the other hand, Lucindo's really good at finding the takedown and submitting her opponent. So, you know, UFC debut, under the bright lights, crowd roaring, which we already know when there's a crowd present and they're not fighting in the apex, we seem to see a lot more finishes than normal. And I think we kind of see one here. I think I could see either one of these ladies getting the finish. Unfortunately, it's a little bit hard to tell how good each of them are in their respective domains just because they haven't fought any high-level competition yet. But we're going to see that on display. I think Yasmin either comes out and gets the KO early, or Lucindo, you know, gets her to the ground and finds a submission. So at plus money, fight doesn't go the distance. We have 15 minutes for one of them to implement their game and get the finish. So I'm really liking that angle too.
These are one of those bets that I've learned from you. This fight doesn't go the distance, and that you're getting plus money on it. Those are the kind of things I look at that and I go, you know what? I might drop a little extra money on that just because I like that there's a little juice on those lines, and I like the idea of the fight not going the distance. And but that's those are some of the things, like when you start giving us those plays, those are the ones I usually hit the hardest. Talking with Michael Ablin, MMA handicapper for Sports Map Elite. Michael, I know we got a few here, and we'll take them. Brian, we're gonna take them a little bit long here, but Azmat Mirzakhanov and Devin Clark, light heavyweight fight on the main card. Mirzakhanov is, if I'm even saying that right, minus 155. Devin Clark is plus 130. Clark's a little bit bigger, 4-inch reach advantage, but a dog in this fight. Don't really know much about Azmat on here, but what do you like on this particular fight?
Yeah, this is another interesting fight because I could see it really going one or two ways. Azmat is very technical striker and has some decent judo wrestling chops, but he struggles with the cardio. I think, you know, one or two things are going to happen. Either Azmat's going to come out here and he's going to knock out Clark early, or Clark's going to kind of weather that early storm and take over and probably put Azmat out later and the fight goes on. So, again, I was kind of looking at fight doesn't go the distance, but it's at minus 175. And you know me, Patrick, anything above minus 150, and I'm like, I don't really know. It's kind of getting a little expensive for me. But we start to look at Azmat. He opened up as, you know, over minus 200, and we've seen all this action come in on Clark. And, I mean, I get it. You know, Clark has the cardio. Azmat has questionable cardio. But when it comes to on the feet, there's just a huge discrepancy. Clark is very hittable. And I find it kind of hard to see a world where Azmat doesn't land some really, really big shots in the first round. And I'm kind of leaning he puts him away. So, you know, as that line starts to trickle down and we get more money in on Clark, as soon as we start getting that minus 150 range, I'm really thinking about starting to make a play on Azmat.
Women's bantamweight. We got two more fights I want to ask you about. They're both ladies' fights. Priscilla Cachera and Ariane Lipsky. Women's bantamweight. This is on the main card. Lipsky is minus 190. Cachera is plus 160. I think I've seen Lipsky fight once. I don't really know much about Cachera. But, you know, when we're talking about how to wager these fights and how to make money on it, how does this fight play out? Where is the value on here?
Yeah, I see. Again, you know, you guys are probably catching a theme tonight, but I'm thinking a lot of these fights don't go the distance. And, you know, again, we have another fight here, doesn't go the distance at plus 110. So plus money for the fight not to go the distance. Now, why do we like this and find value on that? And that's really for, you know, two reasons. It's how Lipsky fights and it's how Cachoeira fights. So Lipsky is going to be the better technical striker, and she throws them very hard. She has some good leg kicks. And if a grappling advantage exists in this fight, it's going to be Lipsky all day. Cachoeira, you know, I guess you can kind of think of her as your standard, if you get into a bar fight type fighter. She is very, very hittable, very questionable striking defense. But she's known for eating those shots, coming forward and throwing right hands. And that's what she's going to have to do in this fight. She's going to be eating some big, big shots from Lipsky. I honestly kind of think Lipsky puts her out and cracks that chin a little bit here. But if Cachoeira can survive, she's going to be coming forward, and she's probably going to land a knockout of her own later in this fight if she can get it there. So, again, at plus money, plus 110, fight doesn't go the distance. I'm liking that line here as well.
All right, one more fight, and this one more is about who's in it more than anything else. This is on the prelim card. It's a women's flyweight fight. Cynthia Calvillo and Nina Nunes, wife of Amanda Nunes. Nina is plus 160. Cynthia Calvillo minus 190. Nina Nunes fighting here for the first time in almost a year and a half. Last time we saw her in the octagon, she got subbed in the first round by Mackenzie Dern. Before that, she hadn't fought in nearly 2 years. Who is Nina Nunes at this point, and what kind of fight can she give Cynthia Calvillo?
Yeah, it's another good question. I mean, look, this is a fight that was rescheduled. So this was originally booked about 5 weeks ago, and Nina Nunes was plus 120. So it was lined way closer. And, I had a bet on Nina Nunes then at plus 120. So when I saw this, and now I think you can get it up at plus 160 in some places, I'm all over that again. I think there's a lot of value on Nunez here. This is going to kind of be your grappler versus striker. If Nunez keeps this standing, she has it on the feet all day. Calvillo is not that great of a striker, and where she strives is on the ground when she's in top control, but I mean, her wrestling is kind of questionable. Amanda Nunes just fought for a title against Julia Pena. And so you got to kind of think that Nina Nunes was a part of that camp, was getting that work in. And, you know, they kind of been in a training camp together for quite some time now. I think this, if we see Nina Nunes come in before the layoff, she has this fight all day. It's just a matter of, you know, does she want it? Has she been training hard? But I was never a huge Calvillo fan. I mean, we just look at her last two fights, and she literally quit on the stool saying, no more. I do not want any more. I do not want to be here. I give up. Not a referee stoppage. It was literally giving up in between rounds. And that is just a horrible red flag for me. I love Nunez at plus 160.
He is Michael Ablin. Sports Map Elite. You can follow him on Twitter at MAblan36, MABLAN36. Get all of his picks at sportsmapelite.com. Michael, lots of great stuff, brother. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Patrick. Have a good night.
All right, Michael Ablin, Sports Map Elite, with us here on Late Hits.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
And a minute here for Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, Physical Therapy. I've been going to see Dr. JJ now almost 7 months, and my results have been phenomenal. And like you guys know, I've told the story plenty of times. When I first moved down here, I was recommended for neck surgery. But since I was moving, well, I didn't get neck surgery. I got painkillers. Painkillers run out, but pain doesn't. And there'd be times where I couldn't turn my neck at all. I'd be in so much pain putting my head on the pillow was excruciating. It'd keep me up all night long. That same pain from my neck would radiate to my left arm, and I wouldn't be able to lift my left arm over my shoulder. My whole arm would just go numb for days at a time. And I, you know, you're looking at your hand to make sure you're still holding things because you can't feel it. Since I started going to see Dr. JJ, the immense change in my life. It's not the pain has been reduced. The pain is gone. The pain is gone. My inability to turn my neck is gone. The restriction of not being able to lift my arm off my shoulder, that's gone. The numbness that I used to get in my left arm, that's gone. In fact, I've gotten the strength back in my left arm so that I can go do the things with my kids that I want to do that in the past I had to make a business decision on about how am I feeling today? Am I able to do it? And I don't mean, you know, do I want to go climb a rock wall? I meant, could I have a catch? Could I, you know, throw a ball? Could I sling an arrow? These are the things that I couldn't, I had to make business decisions about that I don't have to do now because I feel so much better. So if you're dealing with loss of strength, loss of range of motion, pain in a joint or a muscle, you need to go see Dr. JJ. So give her a call, 346-386-6683, 346-386-6683. Or go to getphysicalrx.com, getphysicalrx.com. BMAC, is that Tony Kemp choosing violence on Kyle Tucker and paying the ultimate price?
They just flashed a graphic. Thankfully, Kyle Tucker threw him out, but they just flashed a graphic up on the screen over the last two seasons. Tony Kemp's OPS against Houston, over 800. It's like barely 600 against everyone else.
I was going to say, against everybody else, it's 593.
Yeah, and he was hitting over 300. Like, his batting average, over 300. Like, everyone else is like 230.
He gets up to play the Astros.
Yeah, the former team, the revenge scenario. But, yeah, like you just mentioned, Kyle Tucker... Tony tried to stretch that into a double, and King Tut got him.
Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not run on Kyle Tucker.
Thou shalt not stretch a single into a double on Kyle Tucker.
Thou shalt not.
We need Kyle Tuck in this upcoming Game of Thrones, the new show.
I am excited to see that. I know that it's popular to say how much the last two seasons of Game of Thrones sucked.
It's pretty universally hated, it seems.
Everybody loves, and it's like a dog pile. If it sucks so bad, why did everybody watch it?
I think people get invested, right? I felt that way about different shows, like most specifically The Walking Dead. There were, like, because I got to a point, and I did eventually drop out.
But I quit on The Walking Dead also.
Yeah, like, there were, like, I quit, I think it was like halfway through season 9 when Rick Grimes left.
Nine? Hell, I think I quit after... five.
Well, my point being, like, after season 6, definitely by season 7, I was like, I'm not really enjoying this anymore, but I kept sticking with it because I felt like, man, I've invested all this time. I want to see how it ends. And then I just finally felt like, okay, this show's never going to end. I might as well drop out. Of course, now it is about to end, but I think that might have been part of it why you saw the ratings so high with Game of Thrones, because everyone felt like I'm kind of pot committed, to use a poker reference at this point. I got to see how this ends. Even though they weren't enjoying it.
Are you telling me that you didn't enjoy watching, Sasha get to see, her tormentor get eaten by his own dogs? I mean, is there any reason why they didn't enjoy that? I mean, the whole thing, you know, Jon Snow drawing the sword against like 50,000 enemies is an iconic shot.
That's a great gif. Yeah, that's a great gif.
Why does everybody poo on it? Because everybody else pooed on it, so I have to poo on it. Just stop trying to be a damn film critic. Watch the stuff and enjoy it.
I think a lot of people kind of went into that last season faking they were not going to like it because it had gotten away from the books.
There was no book.
Well, right. That's my point. Because by that point, the books were done because he never finished them.
In fact, there's still no book.
Right, yeah, I don't think those are ever coming out. But I think a lot of people went into those seasons once it got past the books just expecting to hate it. it was kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy where they just expected to hate it, and then they just hated it because they thought they were going to hate it.
I mean, think about this. George R.R. Martin starts a series, gets paid the buku bucks for it to become a TV show, never actually finishes the damn series. And now they're doing a spinoff so he can make more money.
He got away with it, DC.
He's never writing another thing again.
He doesn't have to.
That fat bastard is sitting home watching porn, eating Cheetos. All right? He's going to go to the doctor with an orange wanker. Right? It's the most insane thing ever. You get paid to write a series that you don't actually write, and then you get a spinoff of a series you never finished that you're, again, not writing.
America's great, right?
Where did I go wrong in my career choice?
A lot of places, but that's definitely one of them.
All right, we got one more segment to go as we are trying to see if the Astros are ever going to score a run off one of the worst pitchers in Major League
Baseball. Spoiler alert, they won't.
We got them up next.
You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
And a minute here for Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, treating hearing loss and vertigo. You know, Dr. Reyes is also one of only two audiologists in the entire greater Houston area, specially certified in tinnitus management. If you have a hearing issue, if you think you have a hearing issue, go schedule an appointment with Dr. Reyes. She'll test your hearing, determine what, if any, your hearing difficulties are, and then give you the best treatment option. You know, technological advancements in audiology have been amazing. Today's hearing aids, they're sleek, they're small, they're stylish, they're Bluetooth enabled. You know, they look like AirPods. You can answer calls on them. You can stream your music through them. You get the audio from your TV through them. And Dr. Reyes also works in tandem with Dr. JJ. They handle things like dizziness and balance issues. So call Dr. Reyes, 346-413-9313, 346-413-9313. Go online. Schedule an appointment with Dr. Reyes, texassinusandsnoring.com/services/audiology. texassinusandsnoring.com/services/audiology. Let Dr. Reyes give you back your best hearing. You know, this is one of those games, you know, where, you know, the approach the Astros have at the plate is one of those games where they just drive you crazy. For example, bottom of the first, Altuve, 4-pitch walk. Yuli, first pitch, double play. He just threw 4 in a row out of the zone. Take a damn pitch.
Yeah, make him throw a strike before you offer it something. And while you were doing that live right now, Altuve looks like he's just going to get a double. But we had Dubon strike out just flailing at a curveball or a slider, some sort of breaking pitch.
He's a lousy – Dubon's not a good hitter. And he really has no business being in the lineup over Chaz McCormick, ever. Ever.
Or Trey Mancini.
Well, and that also goes without saying. But, you know, when you're talking about him playing center field – you know, Mancini's not going to play center field.
No, of course not.
So he's going to play over Chaz. He's going to play over Myers. And realistically, Dubon should not be playing over either of those guys. Even with Myers' struggles, he's still hitting better than Dubon. And even with his weakened arm, he still has a better arm than Dubon. I'm not entirely sure why Dubon's on the team.
Other than managing his health, there's no reason Jake Myers shouldn't be on the field trying to figure this out, because there's no way you want Dubon on the field when you get to October. I mean the Astros' best lineup potentially would be if Jake Myers got back to last year, but you're not going to find that out if he's on the bench. Now, if he's hurt and he's not right, I think you're right, he probably isn't right, then that's one thing if you're managing his health. But otherwise, there's no reason that Dubon should be getting reps at the plate, reps in the field, over Jake Myers or Chaz McCormick.
If you're that bent on Chaz not playing center, if you're that bent on, well, you know, because you heard Dusty say, well, you know, I got to get Myers going, but it's hard to get a guy moment when he plays once every 3 days. So if that's the case, then you know what? I know at the major league level, this guy has not been very good, but he's hitting the snot out of the ball at Sugar Land. Put Lewis Brinson on the damn 40 man and put him in the lineup over Dubon. Brinson's hitting 297 with a 353 on base, a 919 OPS. He's got 18 homers and 286 at-bats. It's the best season he's had, like, damn near ever.
I'd be willing to give that a shot.
I would much rather see 28-year-old Lewis Brinson, who once upon a time was a top prospect. I'd rather see him get a set. That guy was a first-round pick by the Junkrabbits. It was a first-round pick. I'd give him a shot. We know what Dubon is. He is a nobody. He's got no pop. He's got no arm. Brinson is a stud fielder who's got wheels to burn and has power. Does he strike out a lot? Yeah. You're telling me Dubon doesn't?
Yeah, that's the thing. All the negatives that you can list off about Jake Myers, McCormick, Brinson, any of these guys, it's not like Dubon does any of it better. So, I mean, what are you really gaining out there? Like, Dusty's talked about, keeping guys going from first to third. Dubon's doesn't have a strong arm in the outfield. He's not preventing any of that.
No, he let a guy go from home to third.
Right.
With Verlander on the mound.
What is the upside?
Finally, the Astros get a run here. Yuli Gurriel with a base hit scoring Jose Altuve.
Should I hit Coolin Gang celebrate that they got a run against the Oakland A's?
Dude, I'm telling you, it's crazy. But this is a nice piece of hitting by Yuli. That's a pitch on the outside part of the plate. He goes right back up the box with it. I know Yuli doesn't have the power that he's had. And look, he only had 1 year where he had a lot of power. Otherwise, he's kind of a team home run guy.
Yeah, he had that 30 home run season, 2019?
But Yuli might wind up with 45, 50 doubles this year. And I know he's probably at best going to hit 255, 260. And his walk rate has plummeted. But if he can go back to being the high contact run producer in that two hole, making contact. The idea of you know, Dusty talking about, you know, Yuli and the gold glove and first base. If you look at metrics and you don't watch the team, if you just look at the stat, just say, Yuli's not that big an impact on the game. If you watch the game, you know Yuli's a big impact on the game. Because if it wasn't for Yuli, Payne'd have 30 errors.
Oh, easily.
All right, Bregman would have 25 errors, and Altuve would have 20 errors, because none of those three have accurate arms.
I don't know if I've seen a first baseman in a long time who picks it as well off the bounce over Yuli Gurriel.
Yuli is constantly making picks out of the dirt.
Because Pena double hops everything.
He's got to come off the bag all the time. Yuli saves 2 errors a game from his fielders. Now, that doesn't show up, you know, in his, you know, in the defensive metrics, in his range, in his run factor, in his range factor. It doesn't show up in that. But he saves 2 runs, he saves 2 errors a game every single game, because, look, Bregman's got a habit of throwing the ball wild, and Pena's constantly bouncing it. And to be fair, I mean, look, Altuve is not a great defensive second baseman. That is not why he's playing.
We all remember when Altuve got the yips a couple years ago. He's not exactly the most accurate arm either.
And he doesn't have a very good arm to begin with. He doesn't have a strong arm. He hits. It's everything he can take to turn the double play. But when you see how many times we see, you know, Altuve in the shift playing shallow right field, you're 60 feet from first base and he hops it. He doesn't have a great arm. Yuli saves so many errors and keeps so many guys off base that if Yuli hits, even if he only hits 250, but if he's hitting 250 and he's getting an RBI every night because he's hitting behind Altuve, I'll live with him at first base. I'll find another way to get Mancini in the lineup.
Yeah, my problem with Dusty and not having Mancini in the lineup is not Yuli. For some reason, Dusty only seems to think that Mancini can play first or DH. My problem is that Mancini's not being trusted to ever play the outfield. It's one thing, I get it, okay, JV's a fly ball pitcher. Maybe you want a stronger outfielder out there. I get that. But if Framber's on the mound and he's going to be getting ground balls 60, 70% of the time, or if you're playing at Minute Maid Park with a short porch in the Crawford box wall to play things off of, that's a situation you can get Mancini in at left field.
And that's exactly it. You can't. I don't want to hear, I got a fly ball pitcher on the mound. you've got the second shortest left field in the majors. All right? Teach him how to play the carom. All right? He can throw the ball. I mean, look, if you can play, you know, Aledmys Diaz out there, I don't see why you can't find out with an 11-12 game lead in the division, find out whether or not Mancini can handle it. You say, oh, well, he's playing right field at Camden Yards, a short right field, playing right field in Camden Yards. Fine. Give him a chance to play. Let's find out what he can do. Coach him up. Otherwise, you know what? If Peña don't start hitting, we better start seeing more Aledmys Diaz at shortstop. And then you can tell me, oh, well, Yordan wants to play left. Good, let him play left. And then put Mancini at DH. There are ways to work that lineup that don't involve Yuli Gurriel coming out of the lineup. Apparently, that is going to do it for tonight. We're out of time. This sucks. Man, I'm Brian. I'm having a great time talking with you. I hope we get to do this again soon.
Great time as always, PC.
Appreciate all of our callers, texters, tweeters, twitchers, Mike Lablin, Sports Map Elite, BMAC on the other side of the list. We're back on Monday at 7 o'clock. Appreciate everybody. We'll hopefully get an Astros late comeback victory here. In the meantime, have a great weekend. H-Town!